everyone listening along in the podcast world. Welcome to another episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrook with Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Today we'll be talking about health, nutrition, and everyone's most dreaded subject, diets. Here to talk to us today is our special guest, Sue Dudding, who is a registered dietitian with CentraCare Health. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you for having me today, Adam.
You're welcome. Some people listening along might be wondering why we're going to be talking about these subjects on a podcast that typically focuses on agriculture and rural life. The answer is actually quite simple. These topics are critical in a lot of ways to those that grow and raise our food and just the overall well-being of those living in rural communities. So with that in mind, how about we dive right in?
There we go.
For the average person, health and nutrition seems like it can be an overwhelming topic to try and figure out. How can people approach the subject without being bombarded?
Here's a thought for you, Adam. Most of us with our diets, if we remember just several key words and apply those things to our diets, that's going to really help us have a healthier diet. We need to eat a variety of foods every day. So a variety of fruits and vegetables, a variety of different kinds of meat and other protein sources. We need to think about moderation. Who doesn't like a treat once in a while? Of course, we all do. But how often are we having that treat? Is it every day or several times a day? Or is it maybe just once a month or a couple times a month? That's what I mean by moderation. So in dietetics, we have a concept where we say all foods fit. There's no food, for the most part, that is totally off limits. And then the third concept is proportionality. We need to have these healthy foods in the right balance. So those are kind of three main concepts to keep in mind when you're selecting your food choices in your diet.
It seems so easy to access information using the internet today, but that can really lead to some fake or misleading sources. I think of someone who might lack any real experience or education or training, but has a blog or a YouTube channel, for example. Do you have any tips on how someone can avoid the extra noise and find more trustworthy information out there?
Yes, I would encourage people to go to the nutrition experts, and that would be your registered dietitians, registered nutritionists. We have had training to help people plan healthy diets. For example, myself and all of the dietitians here at St. Cloud Hospital, we all have at least a four-year degree in food and nutrition. We have all completed a dietetic internship, which is approximately 6 to 12 months of further education. We also have to maintain continuing education. And so we know food. So a dietitian or a nutritionist is a good person to go to for advice. All of our local hospitals in the area have dietitians, and we all take calls and help people by answering questions. One thing to think about if you're looking on the internet, the American Dietetic Association has a very good website, and it's called eatright.org. They have references or resources for the lay people, as well as special resources for professionals, and I visit their site often. Another thing, and we know this just from life in general, that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably isn't true. And so take those things with a grain of salt.
So that's a good segue, because in your experience, what are some of the biggest myths you've kind of heard or encountered out there regarding nutrition and health?
Well, that makes me think about fad diets. Some people really do weird things with their diets by eliminating whole food groups or eating very, very low calorie diets, like putting their bodies in a state of starvation. Those are some of the worst things I've seen.
Well, you led right into my next subject. There are so many different diets out there today, and it really seems like some gain popularity before disappearing and something new comes onto the scene. What's your take on those fad diets, and what should listeners really know about them?
What I would encourage our listeners to do is to use their common sense, first of all. And again, as I mentioned, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I did pull up on the American Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. I pulled up some of the most recent fad diets. One example is called the Dubrow diet, and that is presented by a man, an MD, who is a plastic surgeon. Well, nutrition is not his area of expertise. Plastic surgery is. But in that diet, it calls for long periods of fasting through the day, from 12 to 16 hours. And it really hasn't been properly studied if intermittent fasting is a good diet for people. Normally, people eat throughout the day and they don't eat at night. So we do some intermittent fasting, but long periods of intermittent fasting is not a good idea. I also learned of another diet that kind of creeps me out. It's called the snake diet, and that's encouraging people to eat like a snake. And snakes only eat for 1 to 2 hours a day, and then they fast the remainder of the day. So on this same vein, that's a very long time of fasting. Food that we consume and beverages do provide energy along with vital nutrients, vitamins, and minerals for our health. And so this long periods of fasting is not a good thing to do. Another one of the fad diets is the anti-inflammatory diet. And this diet has very strict and cumbersome rules. It's very hard to follow this diet. So those are some things to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Just in general, some healthy diets, for example, would be the Weight Watchers diet, and I believe now they're being called WW. They include real whole foods, eating in a sensible amount. The Mediterranean diet is a very healthy diet. That's what describes the diet that people who live in the Mediterranean area of the world eat. It includes lots of fruits and vegetables, lots of whole grains, nuts and seeds, fish as a primary source of protein. Red meat is allowed, but again in smaller amounts. And that is another very healthy diet.
Well, I can't personally say that I'm a big fan of snakes, so I think I'll avoid that one.
Good.
Now, you did mention a little bit before about drinks. Mm-hmm. And some diets rely heavily on shakes or, I guess, drinking your nutrients. Is there any difference between the act of eating versus drinking when it comes to nutrition?
Really, there isn't. And here in the hospital, for example, we do have some people who need to consume all of their oral nutrition or an enteral nutrition product in the form of a liquid. But here's the rub. When we go on a diet where it's just drinking a shake or drinking three shakes a day, it doesn't teach us good habits. And what's going to happen to that person when they go off that diet? They go back to regular food. They are probably going to go back to their regular pattern of eating, and they're going to regain the weight. So we want people to learn a new pattern of eating, make new healthy habits.
There's also a prevalence of vitamins and supplements out there. You go to really any store and you'll probably see an aisle worth of them. How do we determine if we actually need to take something like that?
Most of us do not need added vitamins and minerals or added supplements. I would talk to your family doctor if a person had a question about this. For example, a pregnant woman, a prenatal vitamin is probably going to be prescribed, and that would be a good idea for that person to take. Or if someone is recovering from surgery and they maybe had some blood loss, their physician might tell them to get some extra iron, and that would be prescribed. And so that would be a good idea. But if we follow those three basic principles that we started with our talk about today, the variety, moderation, and proportionality, people are going to, for the most part, get the nutrients that they need.
There's an interesting concept out there that where we get our food impacts the type of food we, of course, consume. For example, I came across several articles talking about the growing popularity of dollar stores across the country. Now, consumers are purchasing more and more food from these types of stores. I don't point this out to, of course, be critical of dollar stores, but the food commonly found in these stores tend to be heavily processed or non-perishable and typically lack the fresh options. What are your thoughts on trends like that?
I know what you're talking about. I've thought about that myself. And in the nutrition literature, sometimes we talk about food deserts. usually we think about this in inner cities, but in some of our rural areas where a grocery store is far away, their closest food source might be a convenience store or a dollar store type store. And you are exactly right. There are usually not fresh options in most of those venues, and certainly not the variety that you would find in a grocery store. For the most part, we really encourage people to eat whole, real food. That's where we're going to get the most bang for our buck in nutrition.
And what is considered a whole food?
A whole food would be a fresh fruit or vegetable that maybe you would peel, or maybe it's like an apple that you could just wash it and eat it, the peel included, or maybe it's a vegetable that you would have to peel and cook, but something that is the least processed.
How do our bodies react when we consume something that's heavily processed versus a whole food?
Well, those processed foods often have added components that we really don't need or don't want in our bodies. For example, my work day today, I've been working on the heart floor in the cardiac intensive care, and I've been doing several diet instructions to people who have had heart issues and really need to watch the sodium or salt in their diet. And most processed foods are huge sources of sodium. There are also many other chemical additives. For example, food colorings, food dyes, flavorings, preservatives, things like that added to our food. And some of those things, I think, over time, have been shown to cause problems with our health, and then those items have been banned by the Food and Drug Administration. But we don't know everything. You know, nutrition is a young science. And I've been a dietitian for 40 years, and I've seen changes over the course of my career, and I know there's more things to come.
Farmers markets have become pretty popular options for directly bringing together those that produce our food and those who consume it. Are farmers markets generally seen by nutritionists as a positive source of healthy options?
Yes, dietitians love farmers markets, mainly for the fact that people are able to get a fresh, very fresh, whole food for not a huge price. And many dietitians, I won't say all of us, many of us love to cook and we like to try new recipes and try new things. So they're a wonderful thing to have in our area.
We've seen an introduction of lab-grown proteins come onto the market. There's great debate, of course, within agriculture about these products, but is there any chatter at your level regarding what the future could be for something like this?
I do know about lab-grown meats. I know a little bit about lab-grown meats, and we're not really talking about it a lot in the nutrition world. We are talking about including plant-based sources of protein. So proteins from soy, for example, are good to include in our diet. It'll be interesting to see what comes.
It's happening. You're already seeing some of it. But
yeah,
we're speaking with Sue Dudding, registered dietitian with CentraCare Health. Sue, we talked a little bit, of course, about the fad diets, and we did actually talk about a little bit of what goes into a good diet, but I'd like to kind of elaborate a little bit more on that. Could you walk us through really what is recommended to those who are looking to live a healthy lifestyle?
Yes. The U.S. Department of Agriculture several years ago came up with the MyPlate concept. And I think I'm just going to diverse a little bit here. This is very interesting because we used to have the four food groups, and then we had the five food groups, and then we had the grocery cart picture that showed what proportion of your grocery cart should be different components in our diet. And now we've come up with a plate. And I like the MyPlate because it's a very simple concept. It shows a regular dinner plate, and what I always tell people, it's not the biggest plate in your cupboard. It's like an 8 or 9 inch dinner plate. Divide that plate into fourths. 1/4 of the plate should be your protein source. 1/4 of the plate should be your starch source, something like potatoes, noodles, rice, wild rice. And then 1/2 of your plate should be vegetables. And we do encourage people to eat the lower calorie non-starchy vegetables. Now, besides that nice plate full of food, have a serving of dairy. So, for example, an 8-ounce glass of a low-fat milk, or maybe a low-fat yogurt, about a 6 to 8 ounce serving of yogurt, and then a serving of fruit with your meal. And a serving would be a small piece of fresh fruit or about a 1/2 to 1 cup size of other fruit. And that's going to give you a really nice balanced diet. And especially if you remember to use variety and proportionality in moderation.
There are, of course, many different diets out there, as we've discussed in some length today. But there are different diets for different purposes. There's some for what a lot of people think are losing weight. There are some for maintaining weight. And, of course, there are some people who are looking to gain weight. So how do you vary and pick the right combination, you know, for what you're really trying to do?
What I gave as an example is probably a weight maintenance type diet with the MyPlate. And if you go to the myplate.gov website, they have even more detailed information. And it will certainly, if you're trying to lose weight, it would talk about, you know, how to maybe reduce those portions slightly. If a person needed to gain weight, it would tell you what you could add to your meal to increase the calories.
So is it important to be really strict with your diet, or is it okay to every now and then change it up a bit?
We need to have a little variety in our lives, and I hope that people get some pleasure from eating. And so following a very strict diet for many people can get very boring or monotonous. And so a little bit of those fun things added in once in a while. But remember not to do it too often and to keep your portions small. Now, I will preface this by saying that if people have serious health conditions, it behooves them to follow their special diet closely because it's going to keep them healthier.
And you're talking about the MyPlate. I remember growing up the food pyramid.
Yes.
That was a very visual thing that it was on pretty much every wall of the cafeteria or in any facts or consumer science room and things like that. And I always think of the biggest portion was the bottom, the grains. And in many ways, in the last number of years with different fad diets and things, that has really come under attack. And now with the MyPlate, it is kind of representing a smaller portion. Could you just speak to that point a little bit?
Yes. The old food pyramid had 6 to 11 servings of starch, and it was the base of the pyramid. And there is some chatter in the nutrition world that has maybe helped increase the amount of obesity in our population because it really encouraged people to eat a lot of those carbohydrate foods. Now, carbohydrate foods aren't all bad. You know, we need some of the whole grain carb foods in our diets. But again, it's the balance, the moderation.
And the government, of course, looks at these food guidelines every now and then, and we're entering a period in which they're going to be reviewed, I think, for 2020 through 2025. In fact, the new committee was just announced with various professors and dietitians or doctors across the country. How do these guidelines really impact the work you and your fellow nutritionists do?
You're talking about the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, and you are right. It's the next version that's coming out is for the years 2020 to 2025. It is used by us. We read those guidelines. It helps in the food manufacturers, maybe in some of the directions they're going to go in working with our foods or keeping foods safe for us. It may give guidelines of reducing sugar or reducing salt or increasing exercise, and those are things, of course, that have been recommended in the past. So it helps shape the total direction that we're going in our food systems. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics that I was talking about, I know that members of that group are also on this committee for the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, and that helps in the shaping and information that is provided to dietitians in our diet manual.
If you listen to the news, odds are good that you've probably heard a story that goes, a new study says consuming X will improve your health, it'll be good for your heart or your brain, or reduce your chance of getting cancer. What should people do when they hear things like this?
They need to evaluate that carefully and talk to their doctor. If they have concerns about heart disease, for example, they should talk to their doctor about that or call their local dietitian. Yes, you hear that every week. You hear something like that on the radio or television, and sometimes I just cringe when I hear it because I'm like, oh no, why are they saying this? But it's out there.
And not only that, it seems like a lot of these studies happen now, but over time they can change.
What
was thought today might not be the thought of tomorrow.
That's right. The quality of these studies are really looked at. For example, what kind of a sample group did they use? What other guidelines were they doing in this study? So there's many things that go into these studies. And a type of study called a meta-analysis, which is when they look at many studies that are looking at the same common question or common component, those are the more valid studies. If there's only 10 persons in the sample group, that's really not a valid study.
It would be hard to have a conversation about health and nutrition without actually addressing obesity.
Yes.
Americans often get labeled as being overweight, but waistlines are trending upwards across the entire globe. What long-term impact does obesity have, and what are some actions that can be taken today that can really change that?
Yes, obesity is a serious condition, and it is recognized now by the American Medical Association as a diagnosis. Before, it was not. And so, as the medical community, we're realizing that obesity is a disease. Some of the problems that can develop with people who are obese include heart disease. It has greatly increased people's risk of developing type 2 diabetes. It can cause problems with joint pain, need for joint replacements. It can cause gallbladder disease. I'm just scratching the surface, but many areas are affected by a person's weight. Now, what can we do about it? What we need to do is limit how much food we're putting in our mouths, especially the foods that are what we call empty calories, foods that have a lot of calories but don't give us a lot of the protein, vitamins, minerals, fiber that go with those calories. Also, we need, as a population, we need to be more physically active. Many of us have desk jobs where we're sedentary, and we need to get good exercise. We need to exercise about 30 minutes a day, every day. If a person is trying to lose weight, it's even better to go 60 minutes a day.
I just have to know out of curiosity. So when your friends and your family come over to your house, what is a registered dietitian cooking for them?
Well, I do try to put a vegetable on the table. And do we have dessert? Oftentimes, yes. And is it sometimes empty calories? Maybe sometimes, yes, especially if it's a birthday celebration. But I do try to also have other choices. I do try to have some fresh fruit available. Sometimes if it's a dessert I've made with a Jell-O or pudding, I'll use a low-sugar version of those just to reduce the calories. But yeah, try to make it a little healthier. I love it when people tell me, well, you know, chocolate is one of the food groups. Well, no, it's not. But I do enjoy chocolate myself once in a while.
I think a lot of people listening along would probably agree with that sentiment.
Yeah.
Do you have any parting advice for those listening along?
I would say to remember those three key components. Our best diet or the healthiest diets are diets that include a wide variety of foods, and especially as least processed as possible. Remember to use proportionality and moderation for those special treats.
Well, Sue, I just want to thank you very much for coming on and speaking with us today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
That's Sue Dudding, registered dietitian with CentraCare Health. That's going to do it for this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast. To get more great content, please visit eggcountry.com.